Danon Nutritia Campus is an open science education platform for healthcare professionals overseen by a not-for-profit foundation. The foundation is led by an independent board of medical professionals and academics with one clear goal: to advance the field of nutrition and health from infancy to old age through growing knowledge, training and education of healthcare professionals around the world in collaboration with medical and scientific communities.
Hello and welcome to our podcast. This is the second of three-part series about the teenage brain, its development and how to best support our PKU teens. I'm Kirsten Arring, metabolic dietitian based in Copenhagen, Denmark. And today I'm joined by Bettina Honen and Jane Gilmore from the UK, both clinical psychologists specializing in teenage development and education. So please introduce yourself.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Kirsten. My name is Bettina Honen. My training, I'm a clinical psychologist by training. I work in the field of child mental health and also have a lot of experience working with neurodiversity and understanding the brain, different brain-based kind of disorders in childhood. And also have an academic background, a position at UCL, so it enables me to kind of translate research findings, you know, for the layperson in a way and kind of try to help people discern what does it mean.
Thank you very much. And Jane?
And yes, thank you, Kirsten. It's really lovely to be here. Well, if you, I know most of your listeners aren't necessarily from the UK, but if you're attuned, you might be able to hear I've got a Scottish accent. So that's how you can identify me. So I'm a consultant clinical psychologist at Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, and also a course director in a child developmental master's at University College London. But one of my favourite pastimes has been co-author of the Incredible Teenage Brain, which is why we're here. So Bettina and I, with our colleague Tara Murphy, have a sort of resource package called The Incredible Conversation, which brings together ideas and ways to support young people as they go through adolescence. So that's my remit for today.
Thank you very much for being here today. You have been writing this incredible book called The Incredible Teenage Brain. And in this book, you talk about how teens' social motivation changes, where peer relationships become central, and also that teens are developing their self-identity, which leads to them rediscovering themselves, including medical conditions that may have been diagnosed since birth and early childhood. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to tell you a little about the science, I mean, those of you who were able to listen to the previous episode will have heard Jane talk a little bit about the social focus during this time. So, I mean, it's really clear for anybody who's been with teens. In fact, all of us have been teens, haven't we? That what suddenly there is, or what can feel like a very sudden change overnight sometimes, is this real focus from being, you know, very attached to family towards peers. So peer integration is one of the key tasks during the teenage years. How do I fit in? And what this looks like is wanting to spend more time with peers, kind of giving peer social information very high importance. They're suddenly very tuned into what do my peers think of me. Can be incredibly self-conscious. Self-conscious emotions are really heightened. What this also means is that behavior is very influenced by peers rather than parents. So this idea of fitting in, wanting to be the same. And actually social inclusion, I mean, we all like to be socially included and don't like to be socially excluded. But in behavior, but also at the brain level, it's significantly more so for teenagers. You know, compared to, so they do this paradigm where they compare children, adolescents and adults. And if you put those three groups like in the scanner, looking at their brain, you see a very significant difference with adolescents. It's very painful for them not to be part of the group. It's really important for them to be included. And all of this, it's kind of underpinned by the development of these kind of social cognitive circuits that are going on during this time. And I suppose one of the things that's also really important, and research has shown again and again and again, that actually the teenage brain behaves slightly differently when they're with their peers. And we'll go on to talk a bit more about this in relation to kind of risk taking. And last time we talked about the emotional part of the brain and the thinking brain, this kind of crude two brain model, two ideas of an emotional brain being in charge or the rational brain being in charge. When teenagers are with their friends, their emotional brain is more likely to be in charge. That's something to remember during our conversation. And just at the same time, teens are building their self-identity. So a lot of teen brain power is answering this question, who am I? And, you know, kind of, what do I want to do? What are my goals in life? Those kinds of things. So teens are developmentally programmed to be quite self-absorbed, a little bit egocentric, we might say. It's important. They're working out who I am and who am I. And during this time, their self-concept is kind of in a state of flux. So they will try on new identities to see how they fit. It's a time of experimentation. That's going on for kids with PKU, just as it is for typical teens, with the, you know, the advantages and the downsides that that might bring. And what this means in terms of the self is that they're very, very sensitive to feedback from others about themselves. They're very tuned into what are other people saying about me. So that's the kind of science that's going on.
And what Bettina was saying about the importance of the social inclusion is so important. And one of the most powerful pieces of information, I think, that really helps, you know, highlight the importance of that is that the brain treats social exclusion in the same way. So social pain in the same way as physical pain. So if I got a serious leg injury, the brain would react in the same way as if I wasn't invited to the party. And that piece of information is very important because if we think about the social opportunities that food brings and what, you know, what we often do is we join together to eat together, how important that might be for a young person with PKU and how they may want to just erase the idea of PKU so that they can be included in that, you know, takeaway party or so they can be included in whatever sort of social opportunity there might be, because they are driven towards that. So it's a really important piece of context to have if we're thinking about a young person's social orientation. The other thing to think about is how the social orientation might relate to that idea of identity, as Bettina was saying. Now, is the young person known as the kid with PKU in their school or in their community? And how do they feel about that? Now, some young people may go through phases, as Bettina was saying, there can be really extreme phases where I'm all about PKU. I'm an advocate for PKU and I'm you know, going to protest so kids with PKU have the rights that everyone else has. Or it might be the other extreme where they're trying out being somebody that doesn't have to think about PKU in that moment. It will vacillate from one extreme to another. And those extremities are very unlikely to be the end point. They are a process to go through as that young person learns about their identity. But what is important is, you know, while that identity shift is happening, there's an amazingly complicated sophistication in cognitive thinking, where a young person starts to think more in a more long-term way, probably thinking about their adulthood and their developmental pathway. And so they might re-experience the idea of having PKU almost like it's the first time they've thought about it, really, because it will be the first time they thought about it with their teenage brain in, you know, in gear. So they will go through that process of understanding it as part of their identity in quite a complicated way. And if we come back to the sort of great things about the teenage brain is that they are primed to learn. They want to find out about the world. And so we might think about helping them form that identity with good quality, high level of accuracy in the information, but set out so they can find out about it and explore it and use it to inform their identity and help them maintain that as they segue into as they protect their social integration too, if that makes sense. So there's a lot of things going on that they need to hold together, and that's complicated. It's complicated for an adult, so it surely is complicated for a young person. And having that in mind will help us as the health professionals supporting a young person.
Well, that's really great to highlight all these issues because we all learn a lot, and I feel a little relief because sometimes I feel so insufficient that I can't help the parents, I can't help the child. What can I do? What did I do wrong since they ended up like this? I think everything was fine for the first 12 years and now we're here. So what can we as health professionals and what can parents do to support the teenagers with PKU during this period of rediscovery the best way possible?
I think one of the most powerful things we can do is recognise that how we respond to PKU and our attitude to PKU will be very influential. Okay, so we've talked a lot about how much young people care about their peers, and they really do, but they also care very much about the adults in their life. So if you have been an important professional in that young person's life, you will continue to be. Okay, it might be expressed in a different way, but you still are. So if you deal with PKU as something that is, you know, it's a practical thing, but it's not the end of the world, it's not a catastrophe, we don't have to apologize for it. That is very powerful. It's very powerful also in the family context too. So we've just got to crack on and deal with it. And maybe it's a bit annoying sometimes, but it's all right. Okay, so that is a really important position to have, whatever the issue might be. I think also think about being curious. If there's an issue in the context, you know, we often talk about teenage rebellion, which we're going to talk about in future episodes in a bit more detail, but think about a curiosity. Why is this an issue for the young person? You know, is this about, it could be about peers, it could be about, you know, body image, it could be about anything. But if we think about a young person wanting to be an independent, autonomous person, treat them like an adult and ask the question, because you will never know what you might discover if you take that position. And I think as a professional who's outside the family, you're in a unique position to do that because you know the young person, but you don't quite have the emotionality that a parent might have, or in, you know, so you're separated, which is a great position to have. So you can have some really good conversations about this issue, I think, as a professional. It's one that can be really used to great advantage.
Mm. Yeah, and it just makes me think sometimes it can feel a bit counterintuitive, actually. But what we need to do is to empathize with their need, to accept it, to allow this to be as it is. There's no point in saying, telling them otherwise. This is how it is. Their peers are important. So acknowledge it, you know, almost run at it and say, empathize. It must be so hard when, you know, all of your friends are going to McDonald's or whatever, and you have to do something different. So allow them to have that conversation. And actually what that enables them to do is to work through that and see the other side of it. Problem solving is also important. You know, a professional might be able to do some role playing, you know, so, you know, let's imagine you're in this situation and your friends say, come on, let's all have a pizza. And you're the only one that can't have the pizza. How are you going to do it? What are you going to say? How are you going to save face? You be the friend, you know, I'll be you, or vice versa. Let's have a go. Kind of try to engage them in a fun way, but not saying, oh, you know, what we might be tempted to say is, your brain is so important. Obviously, you can't do that. Or, you know, that's not going to work at this point. Saying, I really acknowledge the difficulty. Let me work with you to think about how you might deal with this differently. Yeah, and also just, I always think it's so important what we say to teenagers. We have a superpower. We don't realize we have a superpower, but actually we really are shaping their self-concept in what we feed back to them. If we say to a young person, oh my God, you just don't care, or you're lazy, and we think that's going to change them and make them change their behavior, actually what it might do is make them believe that they're lazy, make them believe that they don't care. You know, what we have to say is, I know you care. I know that you go out with the best intention, and I know something gets in the way. Let's think about what gets in the way for you. Always holding on to this positive view about their intention, I think, is really helpful.
And Bettina, that's just as you say, that really does make me think about providing that opportunity to say, look, I know you care, maybe you've got the solution, but you're providing that framework, and maybe as a health professional you're in the great position to that. What could we do? Can you come up with a solution? And I'll help you scaffold that a little bit. So, you know, I'm not saying you do the whole thing, but you come up with some ideas. That plays to autonomy. It allows the young person to feel like an independent, valid person, but you're also supporting them and recognizing the problem with the social, social integration and how it's difficult to hold on to the PKU values when, you know, you might want to do or say or eat exactly what your peers are doing. So that's, you know, I think it's a really important point there.
So what you are saying, emphasizing we should treat them with more respect. And, you know, I would like to share with you some memories from, we had summer camps for many years from the Kennedy Center, where we invited children up to 14 years of age. There were around 30 kids together. And then all the doctors, dietitians, nurses, we were kind of, you know, the support person. And then there was also helpers with PKU. So maybe the lifeguard would be PKU. There was a nurse with PKU. And we could see they interacted. It's like they were kind of the group. We were the outsiders all of a sudden. And we taught them how to count exchanges and let them choose their own food. They were so used to parents telling them, you can eat that, but not that. And now we had a whole buffet and say, go and count your exchanges and bring back the food you want to. We taught them how to do blood sampling. And then the adults with PKU, they could say to them, well, when I was 14, I had a very difficult time. Now you see, I'm an educated nurse. I have a child. I'm much, much better. So we have found this extremely helpful to educate them this way, to sort of take the step back and see that they can do wonders together, just leaving us out for a minute.
It's a brilliant intervention. And in fact, I think I read about it, because I think it was in the literature. It's because it plays to all the strengths of cohesion, of using a slightly older peer to educate rather than somebody that's very distant, of having an inclusion, of not being outside, of being empowered and taking the chance to be autonomous and choosing food. It's wonderful and very effective. You know, it's as if you've read the book and integrated into your PKU practice. Yes. So it's just beautiful.
I wish I had read this book 10 years ago, but I didn't. But I have read it now. But also we have a couple of preteens now where we have found support people with PKU 10 years older than them. And that has much more effect than us telling them what to do and what not to do. We can see that. We have to accept that. So that brings me to the next case I would like to present to you. And I choose this because it's also a very sad case. I know this girl, she has had a very hard time. So she's 16 years old, a classical PKU. And she chooses to eat alone during the school lunch break because she does not want her friends to see her low protein food and her amino acid supplement. But of course, now they just wonder why she's sitting in a room eating alone. So they know something is going on, of course. At home, her little sister challenges her with food items saying, you do not dare to eat this. The social authorities has been informed from us about poor compliance with PKU treatment. And after contact with the family, the mother is more strict with diet and sending in more blood samples. But she used the punishment to this girl saying, well, if you don't do as I tell you, then you will not be able to go out with your friends and you will not get any pocket money or whatever. So what do you think about this case? Can we help her in a better way?
Yeah, it's lots of worrying bits in this, you know, and the idea of eating alone, you know, as we talked about that pain. I mean, she's taken herself off, but she's excluded herself from the group. And that's very worrying. And she's eating by herself. You know, what's going on? Has she got a sense of shame or worry about that that diet? And where's that come from? You know, because that has got to come from somewhere. It's a bit like what we're talking about earlier. The adults in a young person's life will telegraph the way to manage or the way to consider PKU. So if there's a sense of shame, I would want to know a little bit about that. I'm also worried that her little sister is kind of goading her with the idea of food. Now, you know, we're talking a lot about the idea of the brain driving towards independence and wanting to be a near adult, essentially. And so a younger sibling, you know, holding food as a sort of power tool over her head is concerning. So we'd kind of want to rethink the family setup, I think, in there, and think about how the hierarchy is developed. You know, how is PKU seen? Is PKU a concern or a pain or an irritation? And has she become that? Is she the irritation? And has the younger sister picked that up somewhere? So we need to think about how to reconfigure that young person in the family so she gets a sense of being a near adult. You know, she's 16. You know, what can she do to pull back that, you know, that autonomy and that independence. You know, it might be that, you know, she takes on, for example, the food buying in the family or something. She takes responsibility for something. And you know, she can then get some additional rights. You know, maybe she has a house key, or, you know, she can get to stay out later, whatever. So there's something about realigning this. So there's a more positive sense of what PKU means, how she's viewed and how PKU is viewed in the family. And somewhere, so she gets a little bit more of a sense of positivity about herself, what the condition is, and her independence.
Yeah, and then thinking about her peers, it made me wonder, you know, how are her peer groups? Is she quite socially isolated generally? I would want to understand that a little bit more. But I suppose more worryingly, perhaps, that she's hiding it. It's something she's ashamed of.
Yes.
Yeah, and that really is something that needs unpicking and helping her in that way. You know, maybe helping her to think about how does she talk about it with her friends? What does it mean to her about herself? So thinking about her self-identity, where she's got that message from, I think will be really important. And almost, again, as I was saying, a bit counterintuitively, focusing on the social and emotional well-being as well as diet compliance. If you get the social and emotional well-being in a better place, if she's happier, if she's more content with who she is and how she fits in, she is complying, actually, isn't she? But that's kind of going to come anyway. So, you know, being more strict with the diet is the wrong way round. Thinking about her well-being, I think, is the most important thing, it feels like, with this young person. And how it's pretty, you know, how she's got this negative idea about PKU and feels so ashamed and wants to hide it.
Yes. I think the other thing to notice is, you know, I'm also worried, there's a lot of worries here, but about mum, you know, because it sounds as if mum is struggling and she needed that support. She needed some, you know, external services to help her manage the diet. So is she feeling overwhelmed? Because, you know, we need to have adults with a consistent pattern who are able to manage this and support the young person, precisely because there'll be moments where they fall off the path or they need some more structuring. So there needs to be a sort of a reserve of energy and capacity to support from the adults till, you know, quite far into, you know, the young person's 20s. So I would want to also ask the question of why is mum struggling and does she need some other support and is she overwhelmed? Because, you know, a well-adjusted parental figure is going to have an enormously positive impact on that young person too.
Absolutely. I mean, we have two kind of parents. We probably have more than two kinds, but we have the parents who are seeking our advice a lot and all the time and trust us. Then we have parents trying to avoid us and not showing what problems or issues they may have in the family. And this is one of them. So, you know, we have to collect this in bits and pieces and see what's going on to try to find a pattern and how we can help the best possible way. So, but thank you very much again for your very valuable comments. Anything you want to add before we close?
Just what a hard job you have. Yeah. I think you're doing amazing.
Thank you.
Really
thank you very
amazing.
Much. You too, Bettina.
Amazing jobs. It's complicated. You know, these are really complicated families and situations to deal with.
I mean, when you have 500 patients under the same roof, you have the entire population.
Wow.
You have all kind of aspects,
wow.
You know, all kind of people. So, and that's, of course, the beauty of the job. That's why I've been in it now for 23 years and no plan to leave PKU at all. So,
wow.
Thank you once again, Jane and Bettina. It has been a great pleasure to have you here. And thank you, everyone, for listening today. And please join us in our next and third podcast to continue the discovery of the teenage brain and how to use that knowledge to best support our preteens and teenagers with PKU. Thank you.
Keep up to to date with future episodes of Dan on Nutrition Campus, the Feed podcast, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, or for more educational content from Dan on Nutrition Campus, visit www.danonnutritioncampus.org.